Record. Okay. I just have a question that I had on my mind. Have you guys thought if you guys know if a space program is a left or right wing policy?
Straight up.
It's hard because, you know, you talk with people on the street and a lot of people will say maybe they will think about like capitalism or like huge investments. So they might think it's right wing, but then again, you can say, you know, who went in space first? The communists. So,
so well, it's government funded too.
Yeah, so so I'm bringing this up because Mr. LaRouche gave a speech, which I think is in Italy, but we'll double check that before we put the tape on the website. A city named Rhodes, or actually the Rhodes Forum. Yeah, not meaning the city, but the 7th annual Rhodes Forum, which is a world public forum on a dialogue of civilization. And at the end is a question asked to LaRouche because, well, first LaRouche makes a short presentation, and there are two questions at the end. But he starts by explaining, first mentioning is a forecast in July 25th, 2007, about the financial collapse. And talks about the actual crisis. Like he mentions right away the question of China and its U.S. dollar debt. I think he mentions it because what we've shown, I think it was today or yesterday, is that the Chinese are very upset about the U.S. policy, especially of Paul Bernanke, which is to pretty much let the dollar lose its value gradually and try to cope with that. And the Chinese are freaking out, and they actually roasted certain U.S. representatives, whose name was Robert Fisher. Robert Fisher was the Dallas Federal Reserve chairman, and he went to see the Chinese. I think it was like a few weeks ago, and every Chinese representative was just there, like kicking his ass. What the hell are you guys doing? You're gonna let this collapse? And you're gonna protect the dollar? And the problem is that a few months before, Timothy Geithner, the Treasury Secretary of the U.S., and I think also Bernanke, declared that they would protect the dollar, they would protect the strength of the dollar. But that's not what's happening, and that got a lot of people furious in China. But LaRouche says, look, okay, you can't be mad, but it's not just about China, obviously. It's about the whole financial system, which is going down, and we're getting close to a dark age. That's where we're heading towards. And then a bit later, after explaining the whole situation and also what exactly is this financial crisis, which is not just a recession, obviously, which is more of a systemic crisis. Also, he goes into why we need this. He also talks about this four power proposal, these four nations, United States, Russia, China, and India, as a cooperating team to be able to fight this British Empire, this monetary system. And he also explains why Europe is impotent, because they have themselves the euro system. They're cut with banks, and as we've published as well, that's the latest news, but Europe, and people in Europe have been trying to pass again the Lisbon Treaty, which was something that was stopped about 2 years ago. This treaty that would pretty much break like any type of barriers left regarding nation states. So
in Europe,
and that would also make Tony Blair as the cowboy in chief of Europe. And it's funny because there's this guy, the Czech, I think it's the Czech president of the president of the Czech Republic. And I forgot exactly how it works, because we saw that in Ireland, for example, they had a referendum. Mm-hmm. Referendum on the subject. Anyway, it passed, actually passed in Ireland. But now they need the signature of this guy. it doesn't seem to bother him too much to have that type of pressure. And he's just saying, well, I don't... He met with Medvedev in Russia. And according to the reports, it was saying that he wouldn't sign that very soon. No, he's not in a rush. But we know who is in a rush, especially when you have people want to put Tony Blair there as a president, as a guy who's responsible for the Iraq War. He's a crazy green fundy. He also became a satanic Christian. Before it was just satanic, now it's satanic Christian. So there's this attempt in Europe. So Europe is not really in a position to fight. It's just too impotent. The system over there is just too impotent. And then LaRouche says, he talks about the fact that we need, you know, because you got to remember, this isn't a dialogue of civilization. Conference. That's what people were talking about. So, and then Rush says, well, okay, well, what we got to do now is that we have all these dissimilar nations, especially the four that we're talking about. And if you just think about it quickly, you can see that the United States, Russia, China, and India, there's a lot of things you can pinpoint as being pretty different. China, India being part of two 5,000-year-old civilization, having a very different political system, also different culture. Same thing for the Russians and the Americans. But then he says this is going to be in our favor, because that's the idea of a dialogue of civilization is required, because Not necessarily for, I guess the way he says it, I'm just going to paraphrase. People can check the website on the speech on the website. But this idea that whatever makes us different is going to be the key tool for us to get at what unites us, right? Because, you know, one thing that you could say, which concerns all every civilization today, is obviously this crisis. And LaRouche talks about it. There's a first question. Yeah, the first question is not that important. The guy just saying, are you really sure we can do this? Are you really sure we can stop these derivatives? And he says, yeah, sure. Then there's another question. The rest of the question is more on the British Empire and this idea of monetarism. And that's important. I just remember today that... we made this video on Rosa Luxemburg and the triple curve. And Rosa Luxemburg also pointed, just like LaRouche, that when you talk empire, you don't just talk about a big fleet or an army or a king and a queen, right? You have a monetary power. And Luxemburg, even at that time, where the empire was much more evident because of its presence throughout the world, you know, and like in India or other places. And she says, look, the key thing about the empire is this monetary force. It's to really cage people with all these monetary, closes or tricks, you know. Mm-hmm. These little tricks where the nation is forced to pay or to just empty themselves out of their natural resources. So he just says that to the guy. He says, well, here's what the British really, really are and what they're doing today. Today it's obvious that that's what we're dealing with. The whole globalization thing has nothing to do with the idea of approaching something universal for people, like a dialogue of a culture. But it's something that was imposed on people, and which exactly this idea of imperialism directly not because you have more military and people, but you have these systems, these monetary systems all over the place. And the last question, which I think is relevant for pretty much everybody here organized at least once, and I thought it was important in a sense to see a bit how people are thinking, how LaRouche is thinking, and it relates a bit to my joke at the beginning on the left right wing policy. I'm just going to read the question. Very short. It's a guy from Russia. So he says, Mr. LaRouche, your very content rich report, blah, 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 you look for some alternative to globalization. Or should we expect some nationalist and other counter movements against globalization? You were talking about the monetary, but what will be the reaction of the economy? For example, the cycles of production, if indeed the alter globalism would prevail. And I just cut on this word alter globalism, which doesn't mean, it can mean a certain trend in the society where all these youth, there's this word, I know in French it's there often, it's called alter mondialisation. Mm-hmm. They say I'm not against, globalization can be a good thing, but it should be more like alter globalization. So that this tricky thing to usually means like, you know, let's talk more about the people and let's help the people. It's very small, usually small little actions done, like buying fair trade coffee and these sorts of things.
But keep the free market system alive and going, just sort of take care of the.
Well, it's like saying, if you look at the consequence of that policy,
alter
mondialisation. The idea is that instead of fighting an imperialist system, you're actually gonna shrink your society and say, well, let's have this beautiful world where, you know, everybody has a bike, you can eat from your own garden, healthy food. You know, a bit like the Venus Project, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Or like the cover of the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah, no, you have this guy who's like hugging a tiger. Saying, yeah. Wouldn't that be great? Well, just buy four cats, it'll be fine. No, in a sense that I'm pretty sure that the Russian, when he said that, that's not what he meant. But what do we mean by, basically, what do we mean by a new approach, a new system? How do we really fight globalization? And this is something that came up as well in this morning's briefing, that we have people in the streets, at the diplomatic level as well, who are concerned and who want to know what to do. The problem is often their epistemology, the way actually they do understand the world, or they understand the so-called dynamic. That's why I think the idea of a space program actually, like, it's a good thing, because it at least breaks this idea of left and right, where the left and right is unable to answer that. And you could ask, I mean, I'm sure if you go to France, I was there a long time ago, but you could have hours and hours of discussion just on that. It wouldn't lead to nothing, but people would actually sit down, left center and social democrato-capitalism. They have all the words over there. They have words. So, I mean, I guess you might have guessed the way LaRouche answers. But he says, well, first of all, we have to get back to more emphasis on physical economy and the development of the minds of peoples in accord with physical economy. The hallmark for this is the Mars Project. And then he goes on about just Mars, Helium 3. And then he ends up, he says, because he at the end he was talking a bit about the credit. Where to put the credit. And he says, but we do have to provide a mechanism where nation states can generate enough credit within themselves to solve these kinds of problems and go on to reach Mars. So, you know, the first thing I thought, I mean, I know LaRouche a bit, but I thought of myself of some other guy or some academics who go to a dialogue of civilization and makes this, you know, this master thesis on like some isolated case in history, you know, the dialogue 1637, and you know, like you can imagine that it would be easy to get lost in the words and make an essay or make a text which might have some interesting ideas, but which is in a sense irrelevant because of the situation that you're in. I think it was important, and the way LaRouche stressed it, you know, he started by saying, well, here's the situation. You guys are all going to be bankrupt very soon, so you want to have a dialogue of culture or civilization? How about we talk about this, you know, just to make sure we're on the same page. And how this idea of different nations talking but to solve a problem, and to do that, to go at the universal, a certain universal principles, that unites these nations instead of having a academic discussion where people just exchange some sometimes empty ideas because the intention itself is not the right intention. You just go there to sell a book or to look interesting, you're going to miss the point. And I think it also relates to this, I think this idea of a of this dialogue of culture, or to get to the, I mean, we've talked about here about the, as we're saying, this question of creativity and how mankind uses that for its own development. And there are ideas that goes against that, and the question of euthanasia is one of them. There was some slug today about that, and I just want to touch a bit again on it, because the Senate Financial Committee in the United States passed 14-9, so it was 13 Democrats and one Republican. They passed the Baucus bill, which was one of the bill made like around Obama, which has inside the it's now called, before it was called the IMAC, I mean the group of experts, like the euthanasia panel. Now it's called the Medicare Commission. Pretty much does the same. Mm-hmm. So it was passed in the Financial Committee, so it's not. But the thing, as one guy mentioned over there, he said, and that's something LaRouche warned about, is that they're probably going to try, after they pass that in the Financial Committee, they might try to actually make a new legislation and pass that new legislation on at the Congress and Senate level, a legislation that would be done in secret. So LaRouche says, no, this is going to be public. This guy's going to go for something worse. And I mean, I think it has to be told that this idea of euthanasia is an imperial policy. Not, you know, we shouldn't approach it from the standpoint of just this fake pro-life, pro-choice debate. But it's really this idea of you know, what is a life? What is the value of a human life? And one of the senators, Jay Rockefeller, you know, he said this thing. He says, you know, we really needed this thing about euthanasia. And my own mother, you know, we kept her alive for 12 years, and there were 6 of those years that were too long. You know, would have liked to do something about it. And if you look in Great Britain, which actually in Great Britain, euthanasia caused about 20,000 deaths a year. They had this case, another stupid case, which just really shows how stupid this can become, because it was a guy who came in to the hospital and he was diagnosed with cancer. And the guy, you know, he was, when you have the cancer, they put you on what's called the Liverpool Care Protocol, which means you're being sedated and you're being deprived of food and water. And the guy, okay, so the guys died. And then they figured out that actually the guy didn't have cancer. He had pneumonia. Right? But, you know, you can say, well, how the hell didn't they see that? Well, exactly because they were too cheap to make the test. They say we didn't need the test. But, and the woman and the guy asked, and she said, why don't you make sure? The guy says, well, we don't need to. And I, well, so she died, he died, and the woman was, she obviously was pissed, and I forget if they said she was trying to do something about it. But the idea is that this is something that you have, that we had as well in Oregon. There was a case of that before with Barbara Coomley, a woman who died. She had cancer. She was refused her pills. And then she had to sue, and she died in the meantime. LaRouche is clear saying we've got to keep the mustache on Obama. The mustache is still there, right? And it should be, you know, you have in the U.S., they have these huge posters of Obama with the mustache. And the funny thing into that is that, and that's also, I guess, a question of epistemology, because a lot of congressmen are, saying, okay, well, the revolt is over now. Now we can breathe. We can start doing what we do. People kept us hostage for a few weeks, but now things are back into order, so we can do what we're gonna do, which is the past, you know, euthanasia. But the key question, and it gets back to us and to everybody here, our presence in the street, and it was shown in the United States. I get a short report about that, but it also being shown here. With the deployments that we had recently in Toronto, Ottawa, and as well here in Montreal. For just the example in the United States, just to show you a bit that I think it's very important for people to be politically active, and whoever comes should really be encouraged to get out there and to start organizing. Because it's just an example, but it's to give you actually, there are two examples. Yeah, I just want to give. But there's in Boston, where our group decided to go organize outside the city itself, to go to post offices in suburbs, banks, etc. And what one of the organizers was saying is that the response was, you still had Obama worshippers and stuff like that, but there was an enormous response of people that want to do something. And even at a certain point, the organizer on a post office, and they got kicked out. They said, leave, you can't be here. So they actually went in an empty parking lot, probably like meters away from the post office. And they had their signs and everything. Actually, you had a bunch of cars stopping, and asking for a briefing, giving money for literature. There was even a group of old ladies that actually stop and say, hey, our friend just called us. We need some literature. Here's some money. So, and they raised like $100 and they got a bunch of contacts.
In 4 hours, they raised $100.
Huh?
In 4 hours, they raised $100.
Yeah, 4 hours. Yeah. And that was like in a, mm-hmm. like desolated, like in the parking lot, which was half empty. So the idea is that our presence kept those people politically alive, because you don't have as many, tunnel meetings as there was, but the ferment is still there. So it's our role to activate that ferment. And I think another example, which is also relevant, is that let me just get straight, because we had members in the LA, and in LA we have this community, political club inside the Democratic Party, and there's been an incident, and I think that it's an important incident, but it was an incident around the Obama mustache and the Democratic Party leadership, in which some people are, half half smart at least, you know, people that have been actually developed by us through the years. It was this big uproar against the mustache, and what happens is that our club was revoked because he says you can't use that, and there was this big kind of a demonstration, but there was a reunion, and one of the leaders showed a pamphlet, and he asked people, you know, do you want this as a Democratic Party symbol? We said, no. Like, do you think that's good? No. So people scream. It was like a very like a heavy metal concert type of a reaction. But despite that, we went to the same type of people, and we said, okay, well, all right, here's the LaRouche plan. Here's what we're proposing. And they needed 25 signatures to put it on the discussion table, on the debate table, and they lacked 4, so they missed 4. But the idea is that the same people that acted like a bunch of babies about the Obama mustache actually are very open to discuss those ideas. But they're not going to go as far as we go because of popular opinion, because, you know, I'm a Democratic Party member, chairman of this or that. So it's going to be our role to really push people to struggle with those ideas. And I think this is the response that we got in Ottawa, Toronto, here, especially since the campus are open, that we see a lot of people that will tell you, shit, piss me off, but I agree with you. I agree with what you're saying. I can't get over your sign, but everything you said seems okay. I guess I just don't know what I'm talking about. So so sometimes they will get into a higher level discussion. And that's something that would a lot of people would not necessarily believe in. You know, you always stop some people that say, they stop and then they talk politics and then they say, but, you know, people are so apolitical. They always talk about the other people. But actually, it's not really true. People are, yeah, they can waste time, okay? That's there. But if we're there, we can actually generate the proper type of discussion where leaders can come out and do their job. And as we were saying, you know, we're in a situation where we can't say who will do what. We can't say this guy is a leader, this guy is not. We just got to be there, organize like hell. So the Quebec, the deployment is going to be very important, Quebec City, for the same reasons. We got to activate as many people as possible. And we get much more response than people would think. Not just because of the mustache, but because also of our organizing. Saying, well, hey, here's what we propose. You know, never mind Obama the Savior or the Nobel Prize winner. No. That's not going to help.
That prize is taking a real dive these last few years, eh?
Well, yeah, there's something that was brought up by our movement. Maybe people saw, but Hitler. Hitler was nominated in 1939 for the Nobel Peace Prize.
So weird.
The, you know, the year of the war.
Hitler?
Yeah. No, Hitler.
Hitler. Hitler got the Nobel Prize.
No, he was nominated.
What does it mean nominated?
Well, like it's like a contest.
Okay.
You have a bunch of people, and you have to pick one. So he was among the finalists, if you want.
Oh, okay.
For Peace Prize?
Yeah.
That was in 1939.
In 1939, the Peace Prize for Hitler.
Maybe because it was scaring people. People were more calm, so it's more peaceful.
I've been using the joke on the street that the difference between Hitler, the one that the difference between Hitler and Obama is that Hitler got the Olympics.
Yeah.
But I think it's a prize for them because they work for the financial elite. Isn't that
the same with Al Gore? I mean, yeah, there's a bunch of, you know. But I think the idea is more that, I mean, we should just laugh at that. I don't think we should even discuss about it, you know.
Yeah, I don't
discuss this. No, if you look, there's this.
Silly. I mean,
there's Obama now. There was this slug here. I didn't talk about it, but we're talking. Obama is actually talking about deploying not 21,000 troops, but 34,000 troops in Afghanistan.
but please, is the
Pope
Nobel organization or Nobel Peace Prize organization related to the British Empire?
Well, it's in one, isn't it in Switzerland?
Norway.
No, it's in Norway.
Norway.
They look like, because if they give to Obama something so easily, they must have some kind of.
And Al Gore too for his film.
Well, maybe you'll get one. You know, maybe you'll, you have a sweet dream and they'll give you a Nobel Prize for something.
They give to Mandela, but Mandela is also a man for corporations.
Well, this Nobel thing, you know, there's it's always a question of exception.
Mm.
You know, Marie Curie got two in science, but you know, she kicked ass.
Yeah.
Today, you know, you look at the math or the economics Nobel Prize, it's a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, if we're to measure people's value based on the prices they receive these days, I mean, we're going to get the worst people are going to be in charge, you know. So never mind the prices, but I think, as the Rush was saying in his one of his audio messages recently about the old Rush plan, we shouldn't be talking about everything, you know. We should be strictly discussing this solution, and to get people involved into that and say, well, you know, that is the priority. It's not anything else. So. Let me just check if there's anything I missed. Just maybe two comments. But the first comment is that because we need people to understand the La Rouge plan, there's maybe some of you have seen it, but there are three, actually four, but the fourth is part of an ongoing. There are three videos on this question of the new financial system we're talking about, which goes into the Glass-Steagall Act, credit, and there's a new one titled, a mixture of both, Glass-Steagall from Money to Credit. But these discussions with John Neufeld, Phil Rubinstein, Michael Kirsch, on what are the principles of, the real principles of this credit system, and why it's a superior system. It's a change in species, if you want, compared to the monetary system. And the other thing which everyone should be helping us with is the coming webcast, November 11th, which is a Wednesday. So Wednesday, probably around 1 again, LaRouche will give a speech. And at that time, we're talking about trying to go back to Toronto or the place like that before it's very too cold. So we got to get ready for that dynamic as well. So to prepare today for the webcast, and then be able to spread the good stuff, the goods outside through Quebec, Ontario. So unless people have questions, I'm gonna let.
I just wanted to first of all the Rhodes Forum. How do you spell Rhodes?
R H O D E S.
So like Cecil Rhodes.
Yeah, which is probably from Cecil Rhodes.
I just wanted to reemphasize, because for me, when you were mentioning LaRouche's response to the German or to the Russian question, it made me realize, or at least what I got out of that was this guy's asking a question that was sort of to this alter globalization, or you know, asking a question that obviously can get you way off on some wayward path, and LaRouche answers it by talking about the Mars Project,
mm-hmm.
which to some minds would be changing the subject.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does is actually you're discussing a project that in order to make it happen, you must address the very crux of the problem, which is the reform of the monetarist system, or the changing of the monetarist system
mm-hmm.
to a credit system, because you can't have a Mars Project without changing it from a monetarist system to a credit system. So I guess just when you were speaking there, it sort of jumped out at me of the genius of this type of policy of going to Mars, because mm-hmm. you actually forced the change, which was identified by Rosa Luxemburg, you know, decades ago, as the key to the very power of the empire itself. To go to Mars, you have to kill the empire. The empire will die naturally if you adopt the policy to go mm-hmm. to Mars.
Yeah, because, you know, when the guy says, should we expect, there's the Russian talking, he says, should we expect some nationalist and other counter movements against globalization? Like, it's a bit, says, you know, never mind that. That's not exactly what's going on, but let me give you what we should be talking about. Never mind, is it counter globalization? Is it pro national? No, it's good.
Still in the box when he's talking about it like that. And to talk about Mars is actually to step outside of the box.
Yeah, it's a major...
The box is gone now.
Yeah.
Box is burned. No, it's short and it's very good. Straight to the point, obviously. Yeah.
Helga had been there 2 years or two, a couple times. I know last year she was there.
Okay.
So, we didn't know in the late night briefing if Lynn was actually there or Skype or something.
Or physically there, I don't know.
But this is a prominent group of people.
So she wasn't really there.
We don't know. I don't know for sure.
Oh.
It's a bit like the LaRouche plan. Because when you read the LaRouche plan, you might be thinking, well, where is the plan? Yeah. But it's there. It's not the way you would think it is.
you could expect the enemy taking notes. Okay, I have an answer for as soon as he says his first point form of the plan, I'm going to come back with something. But the whole time he has to read the whole paper.
Yeah. Read a big 20 pages before.
He's going to get to it. Oh my God, I've read the whole paper. I think I learned something.
other questions?
Huh?
You want me to press twice or just...